Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. We're here again. This week went by so quickly. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and so those of you who don't know, Ryan's wife is imminently expecting, so every week we're kind of like, baby, no baby, okay, show.
No. Yeah, that's true. I can't get around it any longer. Ashley is very pregnant. She'd probably hear me saying this. She hates when I describe her that way. She's just pregnant. But like, if you're going to add a describer to it, she's due in like 3 weeks.
Not even.
Not even, less than 3 weeks. I don't know. I've just been describing it as very pregnant, but she's doing awesome. That's why I'm not worried. And I thought to myself, oh man, I should have texted Jocelyn to let her know that I haven't talked to you today because I've been busy, not because I'm at the hospital saying push, you know.
I just always assume that I'm going to be your first text message when she does go into labor, obviously.
There's a chain of command.
I'm not worried.
I think the first one is definitely making sure that Caden has someone to watch him so I don't have to be like, here, play with this. Don't look over here. Push.
Try not to be traumatized, small child.
He's young. He probably won't remember anything. Hopefully. I mean, you know, it's a good test of parenting.
We should be good for the next couple of weeks, hopefully, fingers crossed. But
I think so.
If we randomly don't have a show next week or the week after, then this is the reason why. And yay for Ryan. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, we're doing
almost,
it.
Almost-ish.
you're continuing to force this baby. It can hear. It can understand. It can pick up words.
Yeah.
You know, and I let it listen to the Gamers Inn. I just kind of like take the little earbuds and stick them in the belly button. Yeah. It's good for the kids' development.
So, assuming you're going to be spending some time at the hospital in the near future,
right?
Are you going to be taking your Switch with you and playing Splatoon 2? See, I totally had a segue.
So we joked about that. Not the fact that you called it a segue and completely ruined it, but we joked about it. I said in front of Ashley, like, oh, you know, it'll be great. Like, if you're like 3 days late from your due date, I should have Mario plus Rabbids to play in the hospital. And that's usually like a test run. Of course, I'm joking. She's probably going to go on time and then the game will be waiting out front and then someone will be able to, I'll have someone pick it up. Don't worry about it, folks. But she's like, yeah, of course you could bring your Switch. So like, I am planning to bring the Switch, but obviously the Switch will stay.
I love how you're just like, I'm floating this as a joke. But I'm totally going to do it.
That's how I ask for permission most of the time. It's just like you test the waters. This is bad advice. You have to make sure that the person you're testing this with is obviously gets your sense of humor and is fine, can see through that veil very quickly. But yeah, no, the plan is to bring the Switch. The plan is to probably play some Splatoon 2. I've got some single player to go. But really and honestly, if I remember my previous experience with Caden, there wasn't a whole lot of hospital time between, you know, being in the room with Ashley waiting for the baby to be fed or whatever and, you know, trying to get some sleep and, like, you don't even know when the baby's going to come. So, like, you could bring the Switch, but, like, you have to make sure you're playing it at the opportune time where you don't look like an asshole, right? You know? Because I'm technically supposed to be there to support her. And that's kind of like the deal we made. It's like, I think it's one of the vows or something. Anyways, it's kind of important, but I will bring it along and I will try to play some games. But I know if I remember correctly, it's a pretty, pretty hairy situation. But you know, there are times when, you know, breastfeeding is a one party job. I'm not equipped.
I was totally trying. You are like going way down the baby train. I was totally trying to bring it back to Splatoon 2.
So Splatoon 2 is this amazing game.
I've gone down that rabbit hole so hard. So I'm reeling you in.
Okay, perfect.
This is not the How to Have a Baby podcast.
Oh, no. It's definitely not. That's a different show that you cannot find on the A-Move Network. Splatoon 2 is a game that we've been playing. I see you've been playing it as well, which is interesting and very awesome. I want to hear your thoughts, but I wanted to know, like, did you try out the Splatfest? Did you get in on that mayonnaise versus ketchup madness?
I did not.
Didn't.
So I picked it up last week, I think either Thursday or Friday. I got a lot of playtime in this weekend. So I didn't get a chance to play in Splatfest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did see many a tweet, and we all know who the winner was in North America. Team yeah. Mayonnaise.
But I don't get it. Like, I had a lot of people saying the right team won, but honestly, and we covered this last week, I don't want to go in depth, but mayonnaise is terrible, everybody. Ketchup is where it's at.
It's so funny because, like I said, I was playing a lot on the weekend, and I guess so Splatfest finished on, was it Saturday?
It was just on Saturday. Yeah, it's one day, which always kind of weirded me out, but yeah.
So then on Sunday, when I went into Splatoon 2, into the lobby, there was all these people, because you know how you can, like, draw stuff, and then it pops up like a speech bubble over your character. All kinds of people with, like, ketchup was robbed, not by condiment, hashtag. Like, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because I guess, like, there's voting, and then there's like it goes by like win rate or something, and so like it was like 73-27 or something in favor of ketchup, but then like mayonnaise won the actual matches or something.
Yeah, so I was confused, but then quickly realized how there's three categories of winning. So mayonnaise won 2-1 in North America, which means that ketchup won the popular vote. It was 70%-30%. But mayonnaise won the solo and team matches, where it was like 51-48%. But here's the thing.
So the good players picked Team Mayo, basically.
Well, not necessarily, because if you look at the popularity vote, you're going to notice there's a skew there where ketchup had more people. And you would think, how do they combat the fact that one team has more players? Wouldn't they have better players? So the way they do matchmaking is the popularity is just one part of it, but I don't think factors at all into the matchmaking, in that most of the matches, I'd say 1 in 5, that the matches I played during Splatfest were against Team Mayonnaise. The other matches were against other Team Ketchup players, which meant our match didn't count, as I assume, didn't count towards the overall win
final
rate.
Results.
So that was kind of not necessarily frustrating, because honestly, you're playing the same game, and I think the difference in prizes is like you get these like ability tokens that you can turn in, like reroll gear and add new gear or new slots and stuff like that. So it's useful currency, but you get 3 if you lose, and I got 3. Sorry, but it depends how many you get depends on how far you progressed in Splatfest. So depending on how many points you earn on each team, you start off as like ketchup pleb, and then like ketchup defender, and then ketchup champion, and it goes on and on. And I got 3 of these ability tokens, and I assume if you win, you just get a little bit more. So it is useful, but to win, obviously, because you're grinding this gear a little more. But if you lose, you're still getting the gear tokens. It's just you're getting less of them, and you have to wait until the next Splatfest to get more of them. But that being said, it still felt like, yeah, ketchup was robbed. And the way that Splatoon has sort of, you know, the Switch has killed off the Miiverse, but Splatoon 2 has kind of like preserved a core weirdness about the Miiverse, which was these posts.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed, but there was like a strong infiltration of furries in the Splatoon 2 Miiverse postings. And gotta say, man, they could not have picked a weirder game to make even weirder by adding user-generated content, because, you know, anything outside of mayonnaise for Team Mayonnaise didn't make it to the forefront. Like, that probably got banned so hard the head spun. But Team Ketchup, I did see a couple of, blood references, but only from, like, let's say the vampire side of things. And nothing quite as crass as what Jimmy was posting in the Discord. Not that bad, but it was weird to see all these like furries, and I kind of get it because like, well, no, I don't get it. Sorry, but
where's Ryan going with this?
But like, all the characters in this game are anthropomorphized, or whatever that word is, animals, right? So maybe the furries are on that. They're good. They're good to go. Right in.
I don't even want to have this conversation.
No, I don't either. I don't know what I'm doing tonight. But I just think that it was weird that the Miiverse was present, and in rare form once again, due to the fact that they chose. Like, do they have people that look at these teams and think, guys, someone's going to do something wrong with this? Let's make the ink the color of mayonnaise and ketchup.
Yeah, I don't, you know? I don't know what they were thinking. And I mean, like, John Jagger on Twitter just totally destroyed me with his comment calling it like CSI Splatfest.
Oh. Yep. See? And there was even a show, there was an episode of CSI based on furry conventions.
There you go. There's your furry tie-in.
Full circle. No, yeah. And you know what? If you actually, you know, it's easy to make that joke, but if you actually played the game, it didn't look as bad as you would have thought. Like, you know, people just maybe need to turn down the silliness and the childishness and just kind of look at it and say, like, that's just white ink and that's like a very pinkish red ink. And it's not... it's not anything to laugh about. It's just two condiments having fun together.
It's totally gross, Ryan.
It's very gross. I don't know.
You can't save it.
I'm not trying to. It's bad. I was joking. But yeah, no, I had fun with it. It was the thing about Splatoon is I found that it was at first frustrating that there was only one day for the Splatfest and I felt like I had to play that one mode. But honestly, it's just one day and the next day I could not play Turf War again. I could just, you know, focus on something else. And I feel like they have enough in the game that you can jump from part to part. And I did kind of dig the fact that there was one day solely devoted to just this one mode and everything else was kind of like, you know, Salmon Run wasn't active and you could do single player, but most, like, even the whole lobby was transformed for Splatfest. And it just kind of, it took the community and turned it into something. It was cool.
So I'm going to stop you there because, like I said, I played on Saturday and Sunday. So technically I played while Splatfest was active.
Okay.
And my number, well, actually, I played ranked, so I'm going to say number two complaint, but... like, I have two really big complaints with this game, and the first one is the UI, because I could not figure out for the life of me how to actually get involved in Splatfest. As someone who didn't play the first game, I'm in this, like, lobby kind of area with a whole bunch of, like, me kind of characters, and I found how to get to, like, the single player area pretty easily, because that was obvious. And then, so I did a little bit of single player, and then I came back out again, and then I just kind of, like, walked forward and found the multiplayer area, and I was just like, okay, like, this is a thing that I can do now, that's cool, and then I played a bunch of multiplayer, but I was like, and maybe it was because I hadn't played before Splatfest, like, I thought that was the, like, I didn't realize there had been a change, I guess, to the, to the lobby, like, because I just, that's what it was when I logged in, so, but yeah, I couldn't figure out, like, there's a lot of things I can't figure out in that game. I can't figure out where to get new or more gear because every time I go into multiplayer matches, I see people wearing all of this super cool stuff and they have like all of these, like all four of their slots unlocked. I only have two slots on all of my stuff. Mm-hmm. And yet I've bought absolutely everything that's available to me in the gear stores. So I'm like, where does all this other stuff come from?
So yeah, the UI is everything's lobby-based, but there are shortcuts. If you hit the X button, it'll bring up like a menu, and you can jump to specific modes. The gear levels up, so the more levels you get, the better chance that higher-level gear is going to show up in the stores.
Okay, so I'm level 12 now, I think.
Oh wow, you rocketed. You're already past me. Like, I haven't even hit rank mode. Okay, so you're level 12.
Yeah, so like I played a lot, dude.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm glad. I'm jealous, but, yeah, but I'm so glad.
I think I'm level 12 now. 12 or 13. And like I said, I bought all the gear that is available in the gear store and I don't know where else to go now. And I'm playing against people, like I said, that I have all their slots unlocked. So I played up until I hit level 10. I played in, I guess, like the unranked mode or regular matchmaking or whatever they call it. Like, there's no points involved or anything. So I played that. It's just Turf War. It was a lot of fun. I got to know the maps a little bit better. But oh my God, it's so freaking frustrating because you go in as like a level one or two character. And I had somebody tell me I was wrong about this on Twitter, and I'm not wrong. He was just being an asshole. But they're basically, you go in as a level one character. You have only unlocked, first of all, you have no currency to actually buy gear. So you just have the like default gear. Then you have only the first weapon unlocked, and you have to level up in order to unlock different weapons. Mm-hmm. And you're playing against, like, in my first game, I'm level one. All the other characters in my lobby were at least level eight, which means they had way more choices than I did in terms of gear. And then I had two people who were over level 20. One dude was a level 24. And I'm like, okay, I understand that there's no, like, this isn't for, like, ranked points, but I don't have the option of playing in ranked right now. And then once I did get to play ranked, it was the same. It was, like, crazy level discrepancies, so crazy unlock discrepancies. And so I'm going in, I'm playing, I'm getting so frustrated because I'm just getting rolled over by these people with this super awesome gear. And the... yes, there is, like, the thing is, it's fairly easy to kill people in Splatoon. It only takes a couple of hits, pretty much, not to kill somebody, to splat somebody.
Yes, they come back.
They're not dead. They're not dead. They just get splatted. So, it doesn't take very many hits. But there's no kind of, like, health discrepancy. So, like, it's not harder to kill a level 24 person than it is to kill a level 1 person. Like, everyone has the same, like, health pool, I guess. But what does change is things like rate that your ink refills, rate that your weapon uses your ink. Like, so you can, you know, like, as a level one character, I was like up and down, refilling my ink canister all the time. And I'm going up against people that can just stand there for like 20 seconds shooting at me and never having to refill because of their gear. So there is a difference between low level characters and high level characters. And so it took me, like, I was really, really frustrated up until I hit, like, level 6, probably. And the only thing that kept me going in multiplayer was the fact that once I hit level 10, I could go into ranked mode. So I was like, I just have to grind out these levels in regular mode. Then I can go to ranked mode, and hopefully then they'll have a rating system and better matchmaking. So anyways, I got all the way through my level 10 levels, and I started to do better once I unlocked more gear. Then I got to do things like use different weapons, like the paint roller. The paint roller in Turf War is like my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
but then you go and you jump into ranked mode, and it's still the same thing.
Right.
They still have, like, because there is a ranking system. You go from C- up to A+. I don't know why they don't start at F. Maybe F makes people feel bad. I don't know. But anyways.
It's got negative connotations.
Come on. Yeah. So everyone gets a participation ribbon. Sorry.
But, Nintendo.
Yeah. So you start at C-. I've worked my way up to C. And basically every time you win, you gain more points and you fill up a meter and then you go up to the next rank. Every time you lose, your meter gets like a crack in it. And then once your meter breaks, if you are past a certain point in the meter, which is about 2/3 of the way up, you don't actually lose your rank. Okay. But if your meter breaks when you're below that line, then you do lose a rank. I haven't lost any ranks yet, so I haven't actually seen that happen. But so I'm up to C now, and I'm still, though I'm going up against other C players, so I'm going, there's like some C pluses, some C minuses, the majority of them are just Cs. So it's all kind of people who are just starting in ranked mode. I'm going up against people, again, who are level like 25. And I'm just like, I understand that we have the same quote unquote skill ranking because, you know, we're all within one rank of each other. But at the same time, like, you just have better gear than I do. And I can't figure out how to unlock better gear. Like I said, I bought everything in the store. So I'm sitting here like there's a knowledge discrepancy between me and these other players as well, because clearly they know how to get the other gear.
So yeah, so in terms of gear,
I'm so frustrated when it comes to that in multiplayer.
The gear is one of those things that, like, it provides a slight advantage, but if that person, you know, min-maxes their gear in a way that makes it a little bit better, that slight advantage becomes an advantage over other players. But what they could be doing is they could purchasing gear with 4 slots. I've noticed that I'm level 6. So when I go into the gear shop, it's usually like one or two slots. They have a, you're going to hate this, but they have the Nintendo Switch app on the phone, which gives you like a bunch of cool stats, including, you know, your win rates, your inkage, your, you know, what the schedule is. So you can look at whether Salmon Run's active or not, what maps are going, what's going on in rank mode, what the next Splatfest is, stuff like that. But it also has an in-app shop where you can order items that appear to be a little rarer than what you'd find in the gear shop. So, and I've seen gear in there that A, looks really cool, and B, has the 3-4 slots. That's one way you can...
You've seen that in your gear store or on the app, you mean?
In the app.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know,
does that cost you real money, or does it cost you in-game currency, or like what's the deal?
So how it works is you order it from the app for free. Everything's free. There's no microtransactions in Splatoon 2. Let's get that out of the way now.
Okay, because that was my biggest concern, was there was some real money store I was missing.
This is Nintendo. I don't think they've fallen that far down the rabbit hole yet. They haven't started microtransactions. Please don't start microtransactions, guys. I was reading that the new WB Lord of the Rings game is going to have microtransactions. I'm like, why? What is this happening right now? Anyways, you know, in the app, you order it, and then you go into the game, and you talk to a specific character, and he'll say, like, yeah, I have an order. And it's the guy, just so you know, it's the guy to the right of the lobby for multiplayer. And I realize, folks, that right now, fresh in the game, yes, the way they have the lobby set up, it requires a little bit of exploration. But once you get used to it, you'll know to beeline it, and then once you get used to it, you actually won't even go to it. You'll just hit the X button and then select the area, and it works just like a menu. It's pretty it's set up really well.
Well, and I did realize that for like shortcuts to get to like ways to buy weapons and stuff. So when I would level up, then I would just go that way instead of having to actually go out and walk through the, like, basically town square.
Yeah.
But then, like, I was looking up other stuff and, like, because I Googled all of this to try to figure it out, and even that didn't help. So that's how convoluted the UI is. Even Google couldn't help me. Basically, it just told me that there's, like, other areas, apparently. And I'm just like, okay, well, that's great. And so I ran all the way around my lobby, but it's all like fenced in. So I can't actually go anywhere yet? Question mark.
As like, far as I know, the only thing that's closed off is, the Salmon Run area. And that only opens on specific times.
I don't, like, basically there's like the kind of promenade, there's like stores on either side, and then there's the big thing, it looks almost like Times Square, the big thing with the screen in front of you, and that's your multiplayer lobby, right?
Yeah.
So I tried going to the right and left of the multiplayer lobby, like around what would be like back alleys, and that's what I mean, it's all fenced off, and then there's like stuff behind you when you first load in, and that's all fenced off too. So basically it's a square, the main lobby is a square, and you can't leave it, but Google tells me that other places, because I looked up like all the gear in Splatoon 2, and it's telling me to go to other places to buy it. And I'm like, I don't know how I unlock these other places.
I mean, so, you probably just need to progress. Like level 12 is kind of
low. Well, but that's low. And so that's what I thought too. But then people that I'm playing who are also level like 12 and 13 have these super cool pieces of gear. So I'm just like, I really don't understand how this is happening and where I'm supposed to go. So like UI is my number one complaint with that. Like,
it almost sounds, and again, I'm not defending it, I'm just kind of logicing it out here, it sounds like the UI is what's standing in front of you as the culprit, but really what it is just the gated. This Splatoon was like this as well, where you felt like everything should have been in front of you to use, but really, like, that would be against the game's wishes to kind of like drip feed content to you. So gear, and like I said, like from the app, it doesn't matter what level I am. I've seen gear in there that's got four icons. And also we mentioned the ability tokens. You can turn those in after a Splatfest to add extra icons to your gear. Mm-hmm. So again, so, I'm not saying
it could be that, and it could be just for instance, the fact that there is an app and there's nowhere in Splatoon 2, at least so far, that has said, hey, download our app and then you can get cool other gear stuff. Like, you know, like I go into the gear store and all I see in the weapon store is like a whole bunch of weapons and they all tell me what level I need to be to unlock them.
Which is
nice. And then I go, yes, which is very nice. Exactly. And then I go into the other two or three stores, which I think are like hats, shirts, and boots. Mm-hmm. And all of them have like 8 icons across the bottom, I want to say.
Yeah.
And those icons like never change. I've just bought them all. There's no like level unlocks. There's no scrolling to see additional stuff. It's just, it is what it is. I've bought them all. I kind of thought maybe when I bought them all, it would give me a new set or something. But I'm just sitting there with no more gear available to me to buy. So mm-hmm. the UI just like leaves a lot to be desired, I think. And then that kind of compounded equals matchmaking issues, I think. Like, I don't know why in competitive ranked play, they don't disable gear and just put everyone on the same playing field. Hmm. That, I think, would solve the problem. But
it's solve a problem for sure.
So, yeah. Like, so anyways. But all that being said, I know that it sounds like I'm
complaining
to complainerson, but I was going to say, I literally played this game for probably 14 hours over 2 days. Like,
way more than I have. Where is my free time and what have you done with it?
Oh. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just joking.
But like, I really enjoyed it. Like, I do. The thing is, even though that I have these issues with multiplayer and mm-hmm. with gear, it's still super fun, and the matches go by so quickly that it's like you don't have enough time to get pissed off. Like, even if you're in a totally like lopsided match, it's only going to be 3 minutes long, and then it's over, and then you're re-queued. And you're not even re-queued necessarily with the same people. So and even then, even if you're re-queued with the same people, they shuffle the teams. So you're never stuck in a situation. Like, I mean, in, for instance, Heroes of the Storm, that I also play a lot of, if you get queued in quick match against a team and you've got a really terrible team comp and their team comp is great, you might be in for 20 or 25 minutes of frustration before your game is actually over and you can move on and you can re-queue. Yeah. In Splatoon 2, the matches are over like this, and it's just like, it's super fun. Every game is like an adrenaline rush. Like, I had the music stuck in my head on a loop because it's like the same music track over and over and over again. Like,
it's good stuff.
Even when I was like going around doing stuff in my like in my real life, I had the theme. I was like doing stuff faster because I had this Splatoon song stuck in my head, and I was like, go. Like, so I mean, it's really fun. It's mm-hmm. really addictive. The gameplay is a little bit odd. It took me a while. I tried the single player and I really didn't like it, mm-hmm. but I love the multiplayer. Mm-hmm. And so I was in multiplayer, and when you're playing, I don't know if it's like a rotational thing or just what happened to happen when I switched modes, but when I was playing regular, it's turf war, right? So you're just trying to get as much paint down and, you know, like just cover as much of the map with your color as you can. But then in ranked mode, you're trying to control a very small, very specific point. I can't remember what it's called now.
Tower? Tower something?
No, it wasn't the tower one. Hmm. It was something else.
Rainmaker?
It might have been control the point or something. Yeah, anyways, so you go from trying to like hold the whole entire map to just holding this one spot, and it was like really weird and hard to get used to, like that transition between one game mode to another. It was weird that they trained you, air quotes, for ranked mode by covering as much of the map as you could, and then ranked mode was almost the exact opposite of that.
So is there no ranked turf war, like, or is
I don't know.
Not that you
when
saw.
When I played, and so this would have been on Sunday, although they do seem to have at least a map rotation, if not an actual like game mode rotation. Mm-hmm. But when I was playing, it was just this, like, there were two maps. There's always two maps in the rotation, so you can get either or, and then you load in and there's a point in the center that's like probably about as wide as like three rollers, and then as long as maybe like five rollers, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So there's like that much space right in the middle of the map, and then once you cover that all with your color, then you control it, and then you have to hold it against the other team. So it's kind of like King of the Hill.
Oh, that sounds cool.
I need to get to level 10. But like I say, it's totally opposite, because then it changes the focus from covering the map with paint to eliminating your opponents and holding a spot. So it's like totally different. So I don't understand why they gate ranked mode because like you can still be way over geared and you still get matched in against people that are like way different than you are. And you're playing an entirely different game mode. Like, it's not even like I learned a whole bunch other than just like learning the maps in regular mode.
Right.
But I mean, like the actual gameplay style was 100% different. The first couple of ranked games I was in, I was like, holy hell, I'm glad my team knows what's going on because I don't even know where the control point is.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to play ranked mode yet, but I was just taking a look at the app, and it looks like there's at least three modes with, you know, Splat Zones is what they call it.
Splat Zones, yeah. I think that's the one that I played.
Tower Control, and then Rainmaker, and then they just sort of, you know, mix things up. And you know, I think there was a, if I remember correctly, in Splatoon, there was a concern that matchmaking was a problem, and then I think they at least illustrated that they addressed it in Splatoon 2. If that isn't the case, I haven't experienced it yet. It sounds like you have, and they haven't addressed it. So it's unfortunate because I know a lot of folks like yourself who are, you know, very into competitive games and then feel like, okay, let's see what Nintendo's slice of life is in competitive games, and it's not living up to your expectations. I have not seen a deep dive on the matchmaking for Splatoon 2. I'm sure it's coming as people start to tear apart how they match people, but
well, and I mean, in the end, I'm getting matched up against people who have my same skill rating, and the way that Nintendo has done it actually feels quite a lot like the way Hearthstone does it with their star system, where it doesn't seem to have any sort of like actual MMR behind it, right? It's just I have played a certain number of games and so therefore I have moved up the ranks, but my actual gameplay is probably not at the level that I'm currently at because it's just a grinding of games in order to move up, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, even though I'm getting paired up against people who are, you know, 12, 13, 14 levels above me, they have a skill rating that is the same as mine. So that means that either they're also new to ranked mode or they're really bad and they've played, you know, like 24 levels worth of ranked mode and yet they are still at a C minus and they haven't moved up at all. So they're just a bad player. So I just need to, you know, keep ranking up to kind of get out of that the same way in Hearthstone that like when you're playing a rank 20, even though you're a legend player, because it's the start of the month, like you're not actually a rank 20 player. You just haven't played enough games yet. So it's the same sort of system. And yeah, so I mean, I don't love it in Hearthstone. I don't love it here because I feel like I'm not being matched up against people who are actually at my skill level. But it's also really difficult to measure skill level in games where, you know, you don't have a large sample size. Like I've probably played 25 ranked games, maybe.
Right.
And, well, maybe a bit more than that. But anyways, I haven't played too many. It's a small sample size anyway. So it's really hard to say, like, okay, yes, you're good or you're not good or this is where you actually belong. So, but it's definitely a grind to get to the level where you should be. So the whole point is I am playing against other people at my skill level who have my same level of experience, right? So it's not as bad as it could be. But
it could be worse. There could be no matchmaking, yeah, but you're right.
Like it still feels bad sometimes, right? When you queue in and you see somebody on the other team who's level 30 and you're just like, damn it.
Yeah. But in, like you said, shorter matches. Now, did you find the ranked modes are a little bit longer or do you find they're still short as well?
They're a little bit longer. They're not as short as regular matches unless you get totally blown out. Like you can be blown out in 30 seconds, right? So. Right. That's but, well, maybe not. 30 seconds is a bit of an exaggeration. I think the shortest game I ever had was probably about a minute and a half. And that was just, like, total domination, like, controlled the point from as soon as you possibly could for and never lost it. Then it, you know, because you get a bonus based on how long your match was. So if you last for a minute, you get a 100-point bonus. If you last for 2 minutes, 200, 3 minutes, 300, and so on. So
yeah, you always get points even if you lose. Yeah. And that's something I noticed as I continued to lose against my own team catch-up players. I'm still bitter about it.
Apparently, yeah. Splatfest was really important to you.
It was.
RIP team catch up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I think like the matches, the ones that actually went back and forth, because I had a few that were like 99% to 100%. Like they felt very Overwatchy in that fashion. Like of them were really, really close. And those ones probably lasted the longest and somewhere in the 6-ish minute mark. Like even the long matches are not that long. Realistically.
Oh, that's good. In comparison to some Heroes matches and that take like 20 minutes to finish on average, this is it's nice. And that's something I really appreciate, is that the 3-minute mode, and I was experimenting, I was just playing the Switch in portable mode up in the living room while Ashley was up there and Caden was hanging about, and I was just like, oh, I'll just do a couple matches, and 3 minutes is the perfect time to be like, oh crap, let me just finish this and then I'll go do something. You know, 3 minutes is, you don't have to, 20 minutes.
If someone
minutes
needs you, even if you've just started your match, you can be like, oh yeah, I'll be there in like 2 minutes. Don't worry.
Exactly. And yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, even state the fact that I was being neglecting or not supporting. Again, it's been one of those episodes, but I feel like when I'm playing Heroes, I need to look at the time and be like, okay, I can guarantee that for the next half hour, no one's going to need me, because and that's not always the case, you know. And with Heroes, it's like, sure, you can get blown up in 10 minutes, but other times it's like, this is going to be a 20-minute match, and you have to tuck in because there's just, if you step away, that's an issue. So I'm happy that I have a multiplayer game that that supports, you know, my lifestyle, where I'm not always available to play 30-minute matches. Now, I am curious to see how, you know, friend matches work, because I have seen a lot of folks on the Switch have picked it up and are playing. So it'll be interesting to see how that works, you know, queuing as a team and stuff, because that's always another true test of how matchmaking works, whether or not it properly matches you against another team and fills in those slots when you don't have a full party. So
yeah,
that'd be interesting.
That's true. That's something I haven't done. I've been solo queuing the whole time, and that usually makes matchmaking worse, right? When you have more than one person in the party. So we'll have to see. But I feel like I had another point, and now I've totally forgotten what it was. Damn.
I don't know.
Stepping away, talking about length of matches. Oh, length of matches. That's what I was going to say. So although match length is short, man, some of my queue times were long. I hope that gets better. Not so much in regular mode, although regular mode from about, I want to say 2 a.m. until about 5 a.m., those were long queues. Those were like, I got up and like went and got a drink and then like came back and there was still like one more person in the queue and I'm sitting there waiting. Like there were times when I had a 15 or 20 minute wait, although it was also like 4 o'clock in the morning. So I get it, but
yeah, you just wish that matchmaking would have been that.
I wish that it was, yeah, there's not as many people playing Splatoon as, say, well, and I mean, obviously, Hearthstone, but like Hearthstone, I can queue in, you know, 15 seconds, regardless of time of day. But I hope Splatoon gets more popular and queues get shorter, as opposed to, you know, queues being long now and then people dropping off and not playing the game as much and then queues only getting longer. Like it could go one of two ways, and I hope it's that people pick up the game and start playing it more, because I do think it's really fun. It's very addictive.
I mean, my understanding from the first game, and that was on the Wii U, and the Switch has almost sold more than the amount of Wii U's that were sold in its entire lifespan, and Splatoon was a popular game that continued to gain content and people playing it, and there was, you know, it wasn't as fast as, say, a popular game like maybe Heroes or Hearthstone, but it still kept pace with demand for players wanting to play others and stuff like that. So I have a feeling that, yes, you will still always have people to queue with. You will always have people playing. It may not be as vibrant, you know, 3 months from now, but right now on the Switch, there's just no other games like this, and I think that's kind of both, you know, a positive thing about the Switch and a negative thing, and that there's not a lot of, this is the only shooter that's come out on the platform, like competitive shooter. And you're not going to get another one for, I'd say, a year. Like there hasn't even been one that's been announced. So for folks that are looking for that competitive experience, this is your option.
It's nice that the Switch has an option, because I mean, like competitive multiplayer games is not Nintendo's wheelhouse, right? So They have like really good co-op games. They have really good single player experiences, but you know, like multiplayer online shooters, not exactly what they're known for. So it's nice that they do have an option. And I think I've seen a few people in the last couple of weeks pick up Switches to play Splatoon and give it a try. So it feels like it's kind of the point in the console cycle, where it's like, this is kind of the tipping point. It's like, okay, now Splatoon 2 has come out, you know, Breath of the Wild came out, Mario Kart came out, or Mario Kart Deluxe, whatever. The reimagined Mario Kart that if you didn't have a Wii U, then, you know, this is your chance to try it out. So I feel like now there's enough options to justify a Switch purchase for people who weren't like super early adopters like you and I, Ryan. So yeah, I'm hoping that it just gets more and more popular and more people play it, because it is fun.
I think it will. I mean, the game certainly has the appeal there, and when you look at it, it screams Nintendo. And I think a lot of folks, this is the first game that people will probably pick up outside of, you know, if they've already played Zelda or Mario Kart, like you said. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Nintendo does with the next, and I think that they're going to keep pumping it full of content to keep it kind of active, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, and like you mentioned, like Splatfest and Salmon Run and, you know, the changing of the maps and stuff, they have a lot of kind of rotating content, so you can't necessarily do everything all at once. So it's going to be harder for people to tire of it, I think. So that's also another thing in its favor. As much as, like, sometimes it can be frustrating when you miss the Salmon Run or when you miss Splatfest, you know, when you do get to experience it, then it's that much fresher.
Yeah.
Which I realized after a long time, that whole like raw, fresh rating system when you go into a lobby, because again, the UI is terrible.
Yeah. It doesn't explain itself very well.
It doesn't explain anything. All of a sudden, I'm like, okay, I'm dry. Now I'm raw. Now I'm fresh. Okay. Did you not notice that underneath, your
character? I noticed it. No, I noticed it, yeah. But I stayed dry the whole time because I haven't been playing a lot. But is that a fish thing? Is it?
It's like bonus XP, and it's per weapon. So you equip a weapon, and you start off dry, and that's like zero points. And then you get 1 point for a win, and you get minus 0.5 for a loss. Then once you hit five, so five wins or, you know, whatever combination of wins and losses gives you 5 points, then you become raw. And then you get a bonus XP when you win a match that pushes you over, then you get bonus XP. So I think it was a huge jump for me. I jumped like a whole level in one match.
Okay.
And then once you're going from raw, like all the way through raw, which is from 5 to 10, then it's 1-for-1. So 1 win gains you a point, a loss loses you a point. So then once you work your way up to 10, it's again another big shroom of XP. And then you go 1 point for a win, and then you lose 1.5 when you lose. Wow. So it becomes harder and harder. And so you can go dry, raw, fresh, very fresh. Or no, not very fresh. Super fresh is the highest
one. Well, you got all the way to the top, eh?
I didn't. I just got to fresh, but then I Googled it because I was like, WTF does this even mean?
So is it ink, or is it painting? Is raw a painting term?
I feel like it's a fish thing.
Okay.
Maybe. I think that's what they were going with.
Because they switch it up. Like stuff. They.
I don't know.
They talk about fish, and then they talk about ink. And they also talk about
paint and ink. Paint. Yeah.
And there's some great stuff. Like, we talked a little bit about Salmon Run last week, and we touched on it this week. Someone had actually tweeted me, we were talking about it last week, and that it just seems so crazy that there was lore in this game, and we weren't sure what Salmon Run was, whether it was just random. But there's a great Reddit comment where they're actually explaining that Salmon Run has a lot of lore there, based in the real world, and that I guess this will explain a lot better. But the guy who gives you the task is a grizzly bear, what looks like a grizzly bear, Mr. Grizz, and he is tasking Inklings, squids, to go out and collect salmon eggs, and salmon eat squids. I didn't know that, but I guess they do.
I didn't know that either.
So they eat squids. So basically, badass,
apparently.
Exactly. Mr. Grizz is sending squids to their death to basically farm, and that's why he says, oh, you'll probably not come back, I'm sending you to your death, kind of thing. He literally is. And I guess what salmon do is they come out of their natural habitat to lay eggs, and that's where bears usually sit and wait for the fish to die.
Right.
And they grab the fish and they eat them. And I guess essentially that's what he's doing, is he's just sending these squids to harvest salmon, and then he's just going to eat all the leftovers and then sell the eggs. It's really cool. I thought it was awesome that someone had sent this to me. It proves that they're just not just listening to our rambling. They're kind of like, I'm going to look into this and then send this in. So I was really happy about that. I should find out who it actually was, but Nestle on Twitter, awesome stuff. Like, just really cool. And you wouldn't even think, if you didn't know anything about salmon, you would just be like, what the heck? You know, this is really weird. But you read this and it actually makes sense. And I guess the guy who wrote it is like a fish expert or a cook, I guess, is probably the better way to put it. But yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes. If you read it, it actually explains a lot better. But he goes in depth as to why Salmon Run actually has lore based in the real world, which is kind of cool.
I was going to say, is it lore if it's actually based on the real world? Is that still the right word for it? Or
I guess it wouldn't be lore. It'd be sort of inspiration for the mode.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense.
The lore is probably something ridiculous, like Mr. Grizz sells the eggs and he's just too lazy to go do it because he's like a fossil. Because there are no, like, everything's extinct. So I don't think he doesn't move very well. He just kind of like jitters when he talks.
I still haven't found this guy, so.
So he's in the barricaded area. So if you open up the stages menu, so the X, and you navigate to stages, you can actually scroll down to salmon mode. And that's why I know the UI is bad, but if you get to use that quick menu, you can actually see the schedule for all the modes, including Salmon Run, and kind of tell, okay, Salmon Run, and Salmon Runs usually go a lot during the weekends. They're pretty much running all weekend if there's no Splatfest. And they have weird times like 2 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. just to kind of bridge the gap for all the time zones so everybody gets a chance to get in there. But you'll actually be able to see all of the content coming up for Salmon Run. And it kind of says, like, you know, happening now, next, soon. And that's how they kind of, you know, dictate it. So, I mean, once you kind of figure out a way to get through the menus, it helps. But you're right. There are, like, little things that they just don't explain. And I'm even finding that as I go through as someone who's played the original pretty heavily. So, yeah.
So, I know you didn't have too much time in Splatoon 2 compared to me. I'm, like, double your level now. No big deal.
True. It's true. You are.
But is that because you've been spending so much time in Fortnite?
Yeah, actually, I have played a lot of Fortnite. I won't go super in-depth. I want to get a little more time in, but I did want to kind of touch base on the game and the concept of it, because I know a lot of folks have probably seen, there's been a big marketing push behind it. You've probably seen it everywhere. I know I've seen it.
I've seen a lot of people streaming it.
Yeah, a lot of people streaming it, a lot of web ads and stuff like that. So Fortnite is this new game from Epic that is going to be free to play in early 2018.
Okay, because that was my question, because okay. I wanted to start playing this, and I thought it was a free-to-play title, and then I went to, like, the website, and it's all these, like, $70 and $80 and up kind of packages for this game, and I was like, what the hell? Like, I thought this was supposed to be a free-to-play title, but that makes more sense. So this is the paid early access, then.
Yeah, and it's a little bit pricier.
It's expensive. It's expensive. Really expensive.
We got a code for Zombies Ate My Podcast, but then that was only one code in which we had to, you know, purchase other codes for, you know, the other co-hosts, Bob and Lou, so to have three people playing. And yeah, it's $40 a pop for the standard edition, and then it gets more and more from there. And I mean, if you do decide to drop some extra coinage on the game, like, you do get free copies of the game, so the value of the packages do increase exponentially. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, outside of the free copies, you're getting immediate access to heroes, skins, and just a bunch of loot crates. So this thing is free to play out the wazoo. And if you pay $40 for it, you might be a little discouraged when you get in there to find out that you have very minimal access to the heroes. You're going to see a lot of cool heroes in the collection and see that you won't be able to use them because you don't have them.
That was the biggest thing that frustrated me when I went to go try Star Wars. Because it was like you had access to like two races and they were pretty much just humans. Like they were, you couldn't play any of the cool stuff. You couldn't play any of the cool classes because when they went free to play, there was very little that was actually free to play. So Fortnite sounds similar.
Yep. And if you are frustrated by Splatoon 2's gear and people having better gear than you, you would immediately be taken aback by how a lot of folks either have grinded the systems and gotten lucky with the loot crates or have purchased, you know, the higher tiers in order to get access to some of the cooler looking classes.
So, well, my problem with Splatoon 2 gear is that you're in a competitive multiplayer environment. So is Fortnite the same thing? Like, are you competing against other players? Because I thought it was more like a co-op PvE kind of experience.
It is co-op PvE, but you are going to be alongside your peers that may or may not have better gear than you. So they will probably perform a little better against the Horde. And honestly, I'm not super far in. The game is very slow at the beginning. There's a bunch of tutorials, mainly to kind of slowly guide you through the many, many layers that are in this game, most of which could be just peeled right out. Due to the fact that it's a free-to-play game. Like, clearly there's a lot of layers in there to encourage you to play more and more. Therefore, you know, like, there's a daily XP bonus that you can grind through by playing your matches, and that expires after the day, and you get a new one. So you're encouraged to play at least two or three matches every day. But it's the core concept is...
Sorry, you just said you're encouraged to play matches every day. So it's not like... Because from the commercials and the trailers and stuff, it very much looked like a persistent world, but it's not.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. It's confusing. There is a persistent area, I believe. And there's like four or five different areas where you will build bases that you will come back to defend every once in a while. Now, I'm very early enough in the game where I haven't gotten to the point where I'm then going back to my base more than a couple times outside of the story. So it's very linear. There's like a 10 page quest log that serves as what I feel is basically the tutorial. And it kind of works like, okay, in stages, you know, quest number one, you're going to build this base and defend it. Quest number two, you're going to look for survivors. This is just an example. Quest three, you're going to build a trap. And that is parts of the main game kind of like broken down into these little tasks to kind of explain to you how things work. So you're not actually playing the full game until I'd say three or four quest pages in, where it's then saying to you, you're going to play a 3+ zone defense map. In which you're going to build a base with your teammates and defend. But it's not as simple as that, where I would describe the main mode, which is a base defense, as it starts out as a scavenge, where you're just dropped into the map and your four players have to just dissipate and find the actual starting zone, you know? The starting zone is kind of a ideal placement of what's called the Atlas that then defends you against the zombies. You have to defend it as it charges. The zombies sort of come from this purple storm thing, and the Atlases kind of dissipate that storm, and then you can clear that area for rewards and stuff. So it starts off in this sort of scavenge mode where you're running around. Your ultimate goal is to find the Atlas, but really it gives you a bunch of sub-goals and progress meters for you to grind through to get better rewards. So, for example, one of the progress meters is construction. So the more stuff you build and scavenge, the higher that bar goes, and the higher that bar in tiers goes, you get extra rewards. So at the beginning of the match, it's kind of frustrating because everyone just dissipates and you don't really know what's going on, and there's not a lot of communication between teammates because everybody's new in the game, and you just kind of like...
Is there like in-game voice chat or...
I haven't used it. I've certainly used like just the text, just kind of say, hey, folks.
Oh, there's like a text channel chat. Okay,
cool. There is a text channel chat. There's enough there.
How do you talk to your teammates?
Yeah, there's enough there that you can communicate with folks, but I felt like because it's brand new, a lot of people are just kind of like getting the feel of it. So I wasn't super
very
upset.
Very tunnel vision-y, like I need to go here and do this. I'm not communicating and stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
I found many times where I just got sick of waiting. So I would find the Atlas, activate it, and be like, we're doing this. You know, I'm going to build this rudimentary base around the thing. And you, the cool thing is, though, like the actual constructing of the bases works very well as a team because everything's telegraphed. So if you are going to put up a wall, that wall is seen sort of blueprinty, if that makes any sense. It's a terrible way to describe it, but...
No, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like a blue outline, and everybody sees that. They see that telegraph, so they know, oh, Ryan's going to put a wall up there, and it's made of steel. So he's doing good. I'm going to let him build that wall. Or Ryan's putting up a wall made of rickety wood. What the hell is this idiot doing? you know, it's cool in that, and the core mechanics of Fortnite are very well put together. So I felt like when me and my teammates were actually all working together to build a base, and when you do play with friends, I feel like that would be very rewarding because you can take as much time as you want building the base. Now, there is a time bonus if you finish the match before a certain amount of days pass. There's a day-night cycle.
Okay.
But it is very cool to build a base and kind of defend it in a way. And, you know, you can lay traps and stuff, but...
There's four people per match?
Yep.
So if you could party up ? With your friends?
You can. Yeah. So the idea would be you join as a lobby and you could go up with three friends, you know, four people in total, and you can pick something off the map, whether it applies to whether it applies to a quest or whether you just want to queue into, I want to do a zone defense and zone defense is like find the Atlas, build a base, defend it. There's another mode called like people rescue, where you have to rescue a certain amount of people in an amount of time. And that was the other thing, is that I think they need to trim the amount of time you're in a match, because we were just talking about how Splatoon 2 has these really tight matches. In Fortnite, there are these matches where it's like, hey, you're gonna defend this base for 20 minutes and you're gonna have a blast. And it's like, not really, because after a certain amount of time, I'm just like shooting zombies and it feels good for the first 3 minutes, but after a while it just feels like
it gets a little monotonous.
Yeah, like you're cleaning, you know, like this is not fun anymore, guys. Like I'm just wiping the floor with these zombies. So I know I'm not.
Well, that's kind of like, I think that's one, because it sounds like kind of tower defense-y.
It is,
where like you're building a whole bunch of stuff and then you've got like mindless mobs that are just gonna, you know, wander through your traps, and hopefully you have enough traps and weapons and walls and whatever to, you know, kill them all before they get to you. So it sounds very similar to that. And one thing that I feel like a lot of tower defense games do really well, the ones that I've played in the past, things like Orcs Must Die, is they're, you know, good or bad, or what's the Dungeon Defenders. We played that. It's similar to that too, I think.
It is.
And those are usually over and done with within, you know, like I think Dungeon Defender matches would take us like what, 15 minutes or so at the most. And then like Orcs Must Die, some of those levels take like literally 2 minutes. So I feel like, 20 minutes seems like a long time to be just standing there defending while a horde tries to break down your walls.
Yeah, and this was one of the story modes, and maybe it was trying to like hammer in the fact that you need to defend against zombies. But like I was saying, it just, I'm early in, and the game's very early on in its early access. Like it just came out a couple weeks ago. I think the $40 entry level is kind of steep. I always feel like early access, you know, I'm not trying to tell developers how they should price their games, but personally, I think for most folks that are curious about Fortnite, will find $40 to be too high. But maybe Epic is really just looking for those folks that are truly interested in contributing to the game. So $40 maybe is a deterrent by design. I don't know, but I'm enjoying it. I really like it. I love tower defense games. I love horde-based games like Horde Mode, where you're defending. I kind of dislike building games and scavenging games, but I think this one does it really well. There are three core building materials, which are steel, brick, and wood, and you find those materials in everything. If you see a car and you break it down, it's going to give you steel. If you see a house wall and it's made of brick, you're going to get brick. And you can construct anywhere. Like, for example, if you want to take this wall out on this house and build an addition, you can do that. Especially if the
Atlas
is...
So you don't have to build just where your Atlas thing is.
No, you can build wherever, and sometimes you need to do that. Like, if you fall in a pit, like I did, you gotta have to build your way out. Or if you're trying to get to an objective, and that objective is above a house, you can kind of build a little staircase to heaven type thing and work your way up. They're very relaxed in terms of how things need to be connected. You can just build stairs up. They don't have to have supports. They just work. As long as they're attached to some sort of surface, even if that surface doesn't technically physically make sense, but you do have to have it attached to something. You can't just have a floating platform, but it still is technically floating if you've got like four stair pieces and a piece of wood here. Like, that doesn't make sense. No, it's aesthetically pleasing to put supports up and make it look like it could really exist. But if you're like me and you're just looking to get to the thing up top, you're just going to build a bunch of stairs. Leonardo da Vinci next to you might be like, that's not really good, guys. Let's go back to the drawing board. But I'm enjoying it. I think it's a lot of fun, the horde mode aspect of it. And one thing that really surprised me was the presentation values in this. It looks beautiful. Like, the game looks really good, very strong cartoony feel, and everything's voice acted. All the storylines are voice acted. We're going to talk about this a little bit later, but like the lady Alloy, she voices the main robot in the game.
Oh, fun.
She's everywhere, and it's amazing. And it's Ashley Birch. She's just super animated and lends her voice very well to the main robot that helps you out. And there's this Pixar type quality to the initial presentation of the game with the cinematics and the way the robots kind of pop in and talk to you, and it's just really cool. Honestly, I think if anyone's on the fence, certainly go out and look up maybe the opening cinematic. Definitely watch the launch trailer. It literally gives you a good feel of what this game should be about. And I keep hearing that later on in the game there's more difficulty to it, but right now I'm finding I'm just mowing everything down. So it's got a slow start, like a really slow start, and that will discourage folks that probably do drop some money on this thing. So I have been told,
give it some time.
Yeah, I've been told to give it more time, so I'm certainly going to be giving it more time. I'll pop back in here. Obviously, we'll do a deep dive on Zombies Ate My Podcast once we're able to all get together and play, but I think it's going to be something that continues to exist from here on out, because I think it's been received quite well from the community, and I don't think Epic is going to drop this one anytime soon. Like, they've invested. This game's been in development for like 4 or 5 years, so it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and so, like, I guess I feel a little bit deterred, I guess, just by, like, thinking about it like a tower defense, because I'm not a huge fan of those, but, like, I kind of thought it was, like, more along the lines of something like Ark, which is like a survival scavenging, you know, build up a base type of a game, but then with kind of like wandering hordes of zombies that might attack you and, you know, having to go out and find survivors and things. And so I thought it was more of like a big open worldy survival-y kind of thing, which I thought would be really, really cool. Because like you said, it has a very cartoony kind of atmosphere, and so it seemed really cool, because some of those survival games go kind of ultra realistic, and that's where they lose me. So this looked still cartoony and fun, but then also like had some of the aspects of those games that I liked. So if they have a mode like that, I think I'd be a little bit more interested, rather than just like tower defense matches with random people. But
there are good portions of some of the maps where, like, the tower defense map, that one has a scavenging component, which would, you know, fall in line with what you're looking for. But there are actual modes, like, you know, Save the People, where you're not building anything. You're just going across the map trying to find folks that need saving. And honestly, the game will kick you into, hey, there's a guy over here and he's being attacked by the horde. You don't build anything. You just go in and fight through these, and it's just a shooting gallery to save these folks. And it is about scavenging, and it is about saving people. And like I said, I'm still going through it, but the two main modes that I've seen so far are the people saving and the tower defense. But, you know, the tower defense has not been a lot of tower defense, but more build a cage around the thing you're defending and then make sure people don't tear down the cage is kind of where I've been at. Now, again, like I said, later on, you might have to coordinate a little better and build, like, you know, death hallways, they call them, where you're funneling monsters through
yeah.
to kind of focus fire. But haven't quite got there yet, but I am looking forward to it because I do enjoy tower defense, so...
Very, very cool. Just want to take a second now to thank the patrons over at patreon.com/thegamersin. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. It really does help us out. Plus, you get access to extra content like Gamers In Game Night, which is going to be... When did we figure it was going to be this time? Probably
tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. Okay, there we go. Yeah, because we forgot to actually announce it last week. So, yes. Because the 17th is actually... technically when I am getting access to my new house. Yay, we bought a house.
Nice.
So we figured the 17th was probably not a good day for game night. So yes, we're going to do that tomorrow. That is I almost said July 10th, August 10th. This summer is flying by. Yeah. So August 10th, we're going to do Gamers In Game Night. So keep your eyes peeled in the Gamers In Discord for giving us all of your suggestions. We'll also put up a post on Patreon. Again, that is patreon.com/thegamersin. We also have an ad this week from The Geek Review. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything. For an honest consumer review, The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. That brings us to our topic of the week this week, which again, we are doing news, odds, and ends. We've got a couple of stories for you this week. The first one is that we got more details on the Horizon. Yay! Zero Dawn DLC expansion. I'm really excited. If you guys couldn't tell, looks like we might actually be going to an active volcano.
Ooh. Is that good? I don't know.
Yes, that's very exciting. Anything that is more Horizon is very exciting to me.
This news is basically, okay, Ryan, November 7th, stop playing around, finish this game, it's totally up your alley. It's got freaking robot dinosaurs.
I'm so surprised you haven't jumped back into this yet.
I keep getting close. If I hadn't have picked up Injustice, I've sort of been grinding through the remainder of the Injustice story and then Splatoon, and you know, Horizon Zero Dawn remains my PS4 game that is in the queue to be finished first. And I've actually gotten to the point where I'm looking at Destiny 2 coming out in September. I was actually planning on getting the PS4 version, blasting through it and being done with the story. But I'm actually now, you know, looking at it as maybe I will wait for the PC release and cancel my pre-order on PS4. But I am excited about this. And I'm wondering, like, it sounds like it's an end game expansion. So it'd be something that sort of slots onto the end of the game.
Which I, as somebody who has played the game, I love this, that they're putting more content. It seems like they're bridging the gap without giving any kind of spoilery anything, but it seems like they're bridging the gap kind of between the, like, cliffhanger that they gave us at the end of the actual game.
Sure.
It's like they're giving us more content that's going to get us to the place that they were kind of hinting at. So I am really excited about that. I'm glad that it's not something that I'll have to, like, go back and pretend that I didn't beat the game in order to experience. Like, it's more additional continuation of the story. So I'm super, super excited. And it's also exploring an area of the map that was always kind of, like, almost cliffhanger-y in and of itself, because I think I've mentioned before there's, like, one tribe of people that are very much like on the fringe, and you don't get to interact with them much. There's like one quest chain that you get to interact with them, and then there's like one set of collectibles that has to do with them. But overall, they're very mysterious and they're very kind of separate from everything else. And this seems to go into their like realm a little bit more. So I'm excited. I think this is going to be a great expansion piece. Yeah. I can't wait. I want it now.
No, I'm...
But I can't believe that it's coming out this quickly, to be honest. For a game that was, like, a totally new idea, that they weren't even 100% sure that they were going to do DLCs or sequels. They were going to wait and see how it was, you know, how it was received and, like, what the critics thought and everything else. And then it was so well received that then they decided to do more content and work on a sequel. So the fact that we're getting this in the same year that it was released is amazing. So...
Yeah,
good on you.
it just looks amazing, and honestly, the screenshots that they have here, just what is these like cool like rainbow pools? That's amazing. Like it just looks, I don't know. I want to explore this world, and every time I see screenshots, I'm like, I need to get back into this. The problem is that it's one of those games that has that like learning curve, and every time I go away from it and come back, I have to re-experience it, and I think it's just, I'm going to have to, like, it, as long as, I know you won't care, but as long as gamers and fans don't mind me, like, leaning into it and then talking about it, again, like, I know Jocelyn will not mind, but...
Nope, not at all.
That's kind of where I'm at, where it's just like, all right, guys, if this is, if I'm getting back into this, we are going to have a road to Horizon Zero Dawn the Frozen Wilds, because we're going to have to pump through this. Now, I did notice that if you go to pre-order it, you get 25% off if you're a PlayStation Plus member, which is... Yes. Awesome. I mean, 25% off of something that is not even close to being out yet or is kind of crazy. So I, if I were you, I would get in on that. If you're
interested. Yeah, I'm going to. As soon as, like, because we have a Polygon article here in the show notes, and as soon as I read it, I was just like, oh man, I didn't even realize I could order it at this point. I would have paid the full price for it.
Yeah.
I need to go do it now. Yeah. Show them how enthusiastic I am. Because, yeah, again, I can't wait for more content for this game. It was such a great experience. And Ryan, I think if you have a weekend you can set aside just to, you know, dive into this, then it's definitely worth it.
I think there's definitely cause for weekends coming up that might be like, hey, I kind of need to like get some extra time. But yeah, this whole episode has just been, you know, there's probably mothers out there that are listening or just like, Ryan, you're a terrible person. But honestly, I'm not really that bad. I'm most of the time when I ask to play games, I'm asking for permission. And Ashley's been nice enough to be like, yeah, of course, do what you got to do. But no, I do need to play Horizon. And I think that what with the baby preparations kind of at the point where we're good to go, it's just a matter of waiting for game time. It's just a matter of, it's a waiting game. So,
well, exactly, you have a lot of waiting, so yeah, might as well fill that waiting time with Horizon Zero Dawn. That's what I think anyways.
I think so. I think it's this weekend I will play it again. I will put everything else on pause and I'll try to get back into Horizon, because I feel like November 7th is going to be here before you know it. That's only, you know, like 3 months away. So that's not that far.
It's not that far. So there was another kind of, I don't even know if you want to call it controversy, but basically there's a new game out called Hellblade, and it will basically delete your save file if you die too many times. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is basically they put permadeath in their video game. And the whole idea of the game is it's kind of this like, psychological thriller sort of a thing. Like it's basically about mental health and it's trying to mess with you. So the idea that, you know, dying too many times and then losing your save game is this kind of sense of dread following you all the way through. Like you can't screw up and it's trying to make you feel a little bit more anxious. So Ryan, what do you think about this idea where if you die too many times or if you're not good at the game, all of a sudden you have to start over?
I look at this and I think, if this is anything like Dark Souls, I don't want any part of it because I will lose my save so hard. But with Hellblade, it looks like Ninja Theory is one of these developers that they've made these games that I've just really enjoyed. You know, Enslaved, played it. Heavenly Sword was something that was interesting but never quite got around to it. But DMC was something I played a lot of as well. So when I saw this, it was like, oh, Ninja Theory's new game. It's priced at about $30. Its length is about 6 hours, I've heard. But the fact that there's this like permadeath, or at least the idea of permadeath there, is interesting to me. As long as the game isn't too punishing. If it's a threat.
Yeah, we should probably I forgot to kind of tag this with spoiler warnings before we got too deep into it. But guys, if you are thinking of playing Hellblade, then I would very much say this is the last thing we're going to talk about this week. So if you want to turn the episode off now, we totally understand. Mm-hmm. This probably won't be a really long chat, but we don't want to spoil things about Hellblade because it would really ruin your experience. So big, huge spoiler warning right now about Hellblade. Now we're going to continue our conversation. So Ryan, you were saying
So the idea that there's a threat there of permadeath, of deleting your save, it was never actually like thrown out there as a feature. It was just sort of implied by the game saying like, look, if these they say they're like black tendrils that work their way up Senua's arm, if they reach your head, you basically game over, man. So a lot of people took that as permadeath, delete your save, start over from the beginning. And I know some designers like Kojima had played around with the idea of literal permadeath, where if you lose, like, the game explodes, like, deletes off your hard drive type thing. It's not as destructive.
that's super intense.
Yeah, but this one was, the idea was that if your character gets game over, then you have to start from scratch. And with a shorter game, I guess it wouldn't necessarily be seen as a super negative, but a lot of people kind of freaked out. Now, people tested the theory. There is no permadeath in it.
Which is the giant spoiler. So yes. Basically, they tell you that you are going to permanently die, you won't be able to come back, you know, your save file's gone, whatever. They tell you all that in the game, and it turns out they did it just to completely mess with people.
Well, they don't say anything about your save. They just say that you, if this progresses too far, it's game over and you won't be able to come back from it in the game as the story Which being told to your character.
Basically the exact same thing, right? Like
it is. I mean, but like I think you're right. It is the same thing, but it doesn't strictly say, like, look, if you play this game poorly, we're going to reach into your hard drive and tear up your save in front of you and be like, nah, you suck. But this mechanic of, like, messing with your head reminds me of Eternal Darkness, and I love that game. It was just weird and quirky and totally messed with you, like, to the point where it would emulate, like, TV signal, like your console being disconnected, like the blue screen with the little number. It was really weird, and you honestly thought, like, oh my god, in Eternal Darkness it would simulate the boot to the GameCube menu, so it would, like, simulate a console reboot, like as if you had legitimately lost your progress due to the fact of your console rebooting randomly. It just totally messed with you, and I look at this, I know it's not the same thing, but It's a small little mechanic that feels very similar to Eternal Darkness, and that makes me happy. Plus, the game looks absolutely beautiful. I'm tempted to check it out only because... But then, you know, the other thing is a lot of people are kind of mixed on it. Like, some people really love it, and other people are like... Actually, most of the articles I've seen on Polygon are, like, the review, and then, like, these really shitty article titles about, like, here's why the audio's terrible in Hellblade. And I'm like... What? Like, how's this news? Like, what was that not represented? It's just weird. But I've noticed sort of this, like, weird mix of news on this game. Is this the only thing you've seen of it?
Split. Yeah, this is all I've seen. I was watching Hotform stream earlier on today, and he was talking a little bit about Hellblade and deleting your saves and stuff like that. But that was the first I'd even heard of the game. So This has not been on my radar at all.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was coming out this week. It kind of surprised me, but I'm happy that it's out. It looks really cool, and a lot of people are kind of celebrating it for its sort of exploration into the idea of showcasing mental health in a video game. The story is basically you are a lady who is trying to save her partner's soul by going into Viking hell and descending into madness. I don't know what the combat's like. All I know is that the game looks beautiful, and there's some kind of exploration in it because I've seen, like, some screenshots of people walking around. I know nothing else about it besides the fact that people thought it was going to delete your save, but I thought it was it would have been a cool idea to talk about at length if we hadn't already had a beefy show. But it's interesting and caught me by surprise. It was one of the only things that kind of percolated to the top this week. So
I mean, I like the idea. I like the idea of games messing with gamers even more than I like the idea of potential permadeath. I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, because the thing is, we used to have permadeath all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in original, like, Mario, you couldn't save your progress. You just kept going. And then once you lost all your little Marios, you had to start over at the beginning again.
Like, that, or they gave you, like, a 40 character password. And that was permadeath because nobody wrote those down.
Right. Oh, my God. I forgot about those. So, I mean, definitely not a new concept, but I would say it's like a resurgence of an old concept. Mm-hmm. And I like it. I like the idea of, you know, potentially having to start over at the beginning if I don't do things properly in the game. I'm a fan. I think it's really cool. But like you said, Ryan, if it's super punishing like Dark Souls and also... there's no saving, then, yeah, I wouldn't last very long in that kind of a title.
Yeah, my understanding is it's an adventure game, and it's not incredibly punishing. But I'm interested, and as a budget title with a shorter, you know, time frame of the shorter span of the game, being like a 6 hour to complete type scenario. Like that's kind of enticing to me as someone who has limited amount of time to play newer games.
Yeah, Ryan, you're not allowed to buy this.
No, I know.
You have to play Horizon, and you are not allowed to buy anything else until you play Horizon. So, I'm putting my foot down.
So if I don't play Horizon for next week, is that just going to be like...
We're canceling the show.
Well, okay. I was going to say...
Apparently you need actual consequences, so I am giving you actual consequences.
Sure. Let's
play
just throw it down.
Play the freaking game, Ryan.
Play the game. If I don't play the game, if there's no show next week, it's either Jocelyn threw a fit... Or Ashley had the baby.
Oh, man.
I'm comfortable with those two scenarios. Yep. Actually, not really. I honestly, we need more time. I'm not ready.
On that note, we have another patron ad this week. This one comes to us from Simon. Thank you so much for supporting us over at patreon.com/thegamersin. Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. You can join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or weeklynews.com. That's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on AMOVE TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, and Embrace the Spoilers, which has returned for coverage of Game of Thrones Season 7, so make sure you go and check that out. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/AMOVETV. If you'd like to email the show and let us know about your experiences in Splatoon 2 or Fortnite, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Hi, everyone.